Businesses have their ups and downs.
Yeah, it's great. It's awesome. It's terrible. I mean, amazing.
With ANZ, you can tailor your vehicle and equipment finance repayments to suit your cash flow. Just search ANZ Business. Applications for credit subject to credit approval criteria.
This podcast is thanks to Telstra. They know that in business, you need to understand your customers. That's why Telstra's introducing Account Management Support, better service for every business with dedicated business experts on the phone and in-store. To find out more, visit Telstra today.
Now.
And now, the Memory Health Show, brought to you by Suvenade. Go to memorydrink.com.au for a free sample.
Yeah, very special guest joining us tonight. And this is going to be most interesting because, look, the chances are, and this, of course, show, thanks to Suvenade, but chances all of us will be affected by a diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's disease at some stage in our lives. If it's not us, it could be a family member, it could be a friend. So when you have a look at the overall statistics, you're going to be touched in some way. It's important to have this conversation, bring the issue to the fore, confront some of the stigmas and discriminations of these diseases head on. So tonight, special guests, Marie McCabe is the CEO of Alzheimer's Australia. Welcome back, Marie.
Thank you very much, John.
And Professor Mark Yates, who's a geriatrician, Director of Clinical Studies at the Ballarat campus of Deakin University. Mark, good evening to you.
Good evening, John. How are you?
Let's kick off with you, Marie. Some raw numbers, because I've mentioned that you're likely to be affected in some way. So how many Australians are currently dealing with dementia or Alzheimer's disease directly?
Well, right now, John, it's around 447,000 Australians living with dementia. And by 2058, without a medical breakthrough, we're looking at around 1.1 million.
Hang on, that's people who are suffering from it, not those...
Who are living with dementia. And certainly by 2028, 1.1 million, there won't be anybody in Australia that's not impacted in some way.
Yeah, I noticed your language there, because I said suffering and you said living with. Now, is that part of what we're dealing with here, trying to handle it in such a way that we're not discriminating and not making it harder for them?
Absolutely. And at Dementia Australia, John, we have language guidelines, and these guidelines have been developed by people living with dementia. And so the language that we use is actually what shapes the context in which their experience arises too. So many people living with dementia say, look, I'm not suffering. We don't want to use the word suffering. Yep. And so we use the word living with dementia. And okay. Thank you for raising that.
Well, I apologise really for using point. It, but I'm glad I did actually, because I noticed you picked me up. And I think that's made a point for all of us listening that we need to make sure we use the right language.
Absolutely. And it makes such a difference when we communicate with people living with dementia, when we share about dementia, and when we have the opportunity to talk about the services and programs that are available and the experiences of people living with dementia.
See, those numbers have floored me, actually. So in England and Wales, am I right here, dementia was the leading cause of death in 2018?
Yes, and in Australia, it's the second leading cause of death overall after heart disease, and it's the leading cause of death of women in Australia. The ABS predicts that within the next 5 years, it will be the leading cause of death overall.
Yeah, when we talk about leading cause of death, because, I mean, we often hear about the flu, for instance, and the flu hits people and it just exacerbates their situation, pneumonia and the like of people who are quite fragile. So when we talk about leading cause of death, how does it happen? Is it degeneration? What happens to the people?
I'm going to hand over to Professor Yates for this. I think this is a perfect question.
I expected
for him,
he
John.
Would be the one, the geriatrician would have the answer. So Mark.
It's a very important question, and I think that the reality of dementia, sadly, is that it is a progressive condition, which eventually means that the person with dementia struggles with simple tasks like eating and speaking and then eventually swallowing. And the dementia itself then will result in something like a pneumonia, which then leads to death. But what we've understood now, so we fully understand the impact of dementia, is that GPs and doctors who are there and signing a death certificate recognise that in fact dementia is the underlying cause of the condition that has led to the death. So that's how we can collect this data accurately and better understand the enormous impact dementia is having in our community.
Yeah, I'm intrigued because we talk about things like motor neurone disease where we know what happens and that the body just essentially stops working and the brain would seem to be still operating, but this is different, is it? You're saying it everything degenerates and then the messages don't go out, so you can't swallow and can't move your mouth, that kind of thing?
Well, in some respects, it's not dissimilar to motor neurone disease in that these are both conditions that eventually damage the neurological system, so the way the brain communicates with the rest of our body, and whether that impacts on swallowing and breathing, and often it affects breathing in motor neurone disease, as well as swallowing. It also affects cognition. So, in fact, one of the common presentations of motor neurone disease is, in fact, a frontotemporal dementia. So they're often people who have motor neurone disease will often present with a dementia as well. And eventually, as the disease progresses, functions, important functions like breathing and swallowing, decline and then death ensues.
Yeah, all right, pardon me, I might be like a bull in a china shop blundering into something else here. You can both help me. But I think all of our listeners are familiar with that wonderful film, The Notebook, where you see the lady who comes in and out of awareness and memory. Does that happen? Because people often get there, if they haven't had any involvement, they get it from popular culture or what they see. Does that happen? You remember things and then suddenly you disappear? Can it happen that way?
Well, it can, but I think that while popular culture has been useful in some respects, it sometimes can cause some misunderstanding, and I think that's one of the key roles that has been so important for Dementia Australia, to try and make sure the community is aware, so the stigma and suddenly some of the discrimination that can happen for people with dementia, and the concept in my practice is that I need to tell patients who I work with, who I'm telling them have the diagnosed the dementia for the first time, is that it's not a black diagnosis. The assumption is it's a very fearful diagnosis and people don't want to hear about it. But most of the people I diagnose with dementia are very early in their dementia and they're still driving a car. They're still looking after grandchildren. They're still very active in their lives. And the last thing I want them to believe is just because they've been given a diagnosis of dementia, which is one of the problems we face with the stigma of the word, is suddenly their lives stop, which I think is why it's so important. Dementia Australia talks about living with dementia because 75% of the community who have dementia are living in the community. 75% of the population are living in the community. They're active members, supported perhaps, but also actively caring for themselves.
Yeah, that's what you're trying to do, Marie. Then I guess the language has got to be right and people need to know, all right, I've got this diagnosis. Do I talk about it? Do I allow it to bring me down and crush my spirit? Because it can be really important, can't it, that optimism.
Absolutely. And one of the other things, John, is the response of the community to people living with dementia when they share that they've got a diagnosis. And, you know, it's what our clients tell us is that it can be one of the most profoundly isolating conditions. And when family and friends hear that their loved one has got dementia, often people feel very uncomfortable. And we know from the isolation and discrimination report that we did a couple of years ago that around 60% of people shared that they don't know what to say to somebody who's got dementia. But what was really encouraging was about the same number said that they really wanted to. They wanted to know what they could say and what they could do that would make a difference.
Well, can you give us a bit of a pricey? I know it's probably a broader subject, but what would you do? You're going off to lunch with, Gran or grandfather, and you got the kids in tow and you know what's happened. So how do you handle that? How do you broadly approach what you say?
Well, I think it's the way that we would like to be approached. I mean, because somebody's got dementia, it doesn't mean that part of has changed. It might be that they may be a little slower in staying up with the conversation. It might be that they need some minimal assistance with some of the tasks that they do. But in the earlier stages of dementia, they will most likely function the way that they have already.
Yep.
And the more we allow their independence and facilitate that, the better off the person is.
Yep.
And, you know, what what people say they want is to remain engaged in the things that they love with the people that they love. And I think if we were more understanding as a community generally and better informed, it would be easier for people. And, you know, people can continue to stay in their jobs for a period of time after a diagnosis of dementia. Now, we know that it's a progressive condition, but certainly they function very well for a long period of time. And the longer that we can support people to function well, the better they are, the happier they are, the more engaged they remain, and it's better for everybody.
Okay, it's really important. Look, I'll go back to you, Mark, because I want to play a bit of Kelvin. I've seen these interviews. Kelvin's not that old. He's been taking Suvenaid to manage his symptoms, and we've talked about it here, Suvenaid and the impact it can have. So here's a little bit of what he had to say.
My Suvenaid journey started about 5 years ago when I started to forget small things. For 2 years, doctors told me I was too young to have Alzheimer's disease. My wife took me to the doctor after nobody seemed to have any answers for us. In 2017, I was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. It was almost a relief for my wife. And to get a diagnosis after so long. The kids were devastated, of course. They were worried that the children wouldn't get to go see Granddad anymore. I got older. I didn't do things that I should be doing. As a result of the diagnosis, I was recommended Suvenaid, and I've been taking it every day for the last 2 years. I've since remained at the same point since diagnosis and believe it's because of the Suvenaid. I really believe Suvenaid has helped prevent my memory health from getting worse. It's something I'm grateful for every day. Precious extra time with my wife and kids.
Yeah, look, I've had a look at that video. It's very moving. Mark, a bit more about Kelvin, her age. He said he was relatively young.
He's relatively, I don't know Kelvin personally, obviously, but he is relatively young. And I think what's interesting is two very important things. But first of all, that I think it's a real, you know, we've got to be very careful as doctors. It's a that we don't assume that just because somebody is young looking often, it's often not that they're young themselves, but they may be very active. They may be sort of treasure of the Probus Club, and they may be looking after grandchildren, driving a car, but they're still saying there's something wrong with my memory and thinking. And just to put that to one side, and particularly now with the advent of Suvenaid being available and the potential to delay progression, which the early Suvenaid studies look like they're going to show, and we're waiting for the published reports. But with those possibilities there, the most important thing that I think comes from this is that in primary care and general practice, and with us as specialists in hospitals in particular, when these issues might present for the first time, that these sorts of concerns are not disregarded anymore, but they're actually investigated and thought about. There's lots of different causes. And the second thing is to realise, of course, that receiving a diagnosis of dementia, while difficult, can also be a huge relief for families and the patient around, because finally they can make some sense going wrong.
Yeah, look, let's take a break. There's a couple of questions I want to follow on from that, actually, if I can, for both of you. We'll take a short break. It's the Memory Health Show here, and it's now 11 minutes to 10. One 3 1 8 7 3 is the number. It's the Memory Health Show here. Thanks to Suvenaid, we've got Marie McCabe from Dementia Australia and Professor Mark Yates, who is a leading geriatrician. Let's just go quickly to you, Marie. If someone's experiencing discrimination, you mentioned that. I mean, who should they turn to? What do they do if they are being discriminated against?
Well, look, some of the discrimination, John, is quite subtle, and it's often that people are being unthinking. And what our clients say is that it's often when they're given a diagnosis of dementia, they let people know, and all of a sudden their loved ones start talking to their carer and not to them. And it's interesting how this can manifest. And I think the thing to do is for the person to say, look, you know,
It's completely fine to talk to me. Nothing much has changed. Yep. And what makes a difference for me is to be treated the same as I always have been. Yeah.
My mum had an accent, actually, and my schoolmates would talk louder to her because they thought this would get the message through. I wonder if that happens.
It does happen, and it's fascinating the things that people will do. And often people do it out of trying to include them and make sure that they're involved and not knowing what else to do.
Yep.
And at Dementia Australia, the website is really rich with information. We have a number of help sheets, and I really do encourage people to check them out.
Yeah, and look, to you, Mark, we've mentioned SouvenAids, the sponsor of the session, and people listening regularly would know it's a food. It's been carefully put together to provide the nutrients to those parts of the brain that are affected, and it's for once you've got the diagnosis and it slows the progress, and there's a lot of work been done suggesting that is exactly what happens.
Well, yes, it's not only, I mean, the diagnosis could be what we call mild cognitive impairment as well as very early Alzheimer's disease. And that was the study population, a fascinating study, where after 3 years of taking SouvenAid consistently, the population who were on the placebo, which is the dummy copy of SouvenAid, had clearly declined more than the population who were taking the SouvenAid, which is the active product. And the parts of their brain hadn't shrunk as much, and their families could identify them through a particular scales to say they were more active in the community. And that's a very interesting and quite unique finding, which we are very excited about and should really make a difference to a large number of people.
Yeah, because Kelvin was there, and I mean it can start at a relatively early age, can't it, as well? The mild cognitive impairment.
It can. I mean, mild cognitive impairment is quite common, and we would expect to see it in at least a quarter of people between the ages of 80 and 84, and at least 10 to 15% of people 65 to 75.
Yep.
So it's a very common condition. If it's got the suggestion that it might be a sort of an harbinger or an early Alzheimer's disease, then in fact that's where it's most useful.
All right. Thank you both for coming in. And, of course, with SouvenAid, people can find it. You should talk to a doctor. You can also purchase it from chemists as well. That's correct. Is that right?
That's correct.
And I think you take a bottle a day. It's in different flavours. I've seen the different flavours as well. So there you go. So I think there's – I don't think there's a chocolate one. That's what – there's a bit of – you know,
no,
maybe.
But the cappuccino flavour is pretty good.
Apparently, and, that's right.
It's been the favourite amongst my patients, at least. But if you don't like that, there's vanilla and strawberry.
There's a couple of very good flavours here. All right. Hey, Mark, great to have you on. Thank you so much, Professor
Doc.
Mark Yates from the Ballarat Clinical School there, Deakin University, geriatrician, and Marie McCabe from Dementia Australia. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks so much, John.
That's the Memory Health Show. The 10 o'clock news coming up after this.